The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So welcome to our sixth session class on the Dharma life. It's wonderful to see so many people who are interested in that. It's certainly a time when we need such a thing in the world. And just as a kind of a brief overview, I think you were all able to read the description, but we'll meet every week for the next 6 weeks. That's until February 11th. Is that right? February 11th. This same time for 2 hours in the afternoon or evening on Thursday. So, and the class will be a combination of teachings and time for you to talk with each other and guided meditation and some reflection. So it's kind of a mix, and we will have a break since I know it's 2 hours is kind of a long time to sit, and we'll always be at this same Zoom link. So if you want to save that would be great. And then I'll turn it over to Diana to help all of us bring our voice in, and maybe she'll, well, maybe also I'll say that I love teaching with Diana, and we've taught a number of things together, and this one looks like it's going to be really fun with this group of people. I so much appreciate it. Thank you, Diana.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you. Yeah, you know, Kim and I, it's a joy to plan classes together, talk about things together, because we're kind of have a similar orientation, but we've been practicing together for so long too, right? Quite some time. So I'll just tell this tiny little story that Kim was the president of IMC and I was the treasurer of IMC. And Kim and I disappeared on a 3-month retreat. And then when we came out of the retreat, people at the IMC said, "Hey, we bought a retreat center." I'm like, "What? Whoa, okay, you know."
Without the president or the treasurer.
And that was the beginning of IRC. Some of you might know that, you know, we now have a retreat center in Santa Cruz. So that's, I don't know, I like that story. It's kind of funny that we went off on retreat and they did this. So, but we'd love to hear a little bit from each of you. To just have your voice in the room here. You'll have plenty of opportunities to ask us questions and to talk amongst yourselves. But to start us off, I'd like to call your name. And if you could just say your name, location, and favorite vegetable. This is just, and it doesn't matter what, you know, you don't have to, don't spend too much time thinking about your favorite vegetable, but this is just a way to, a little bit of an icebreaker. So I'm going to go by the order that you are on my screen. And so if you could unmute yourself and then name, location, and favorite vegetable. So I'm going to start with Catherine and then Anne Finnerin.
I'm Catherine, and my favorite vegetable is bok choy.
And do you want to say where you're from, where you are?
Oh, yeah. Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz. Thank you, Catherine. So Anne and then Dawn.
Okay. I'm Anne. I'm from Newport Beach, and I guess I'm the anti-George Bush. I like broccoli.
So Dawn and then Chris in San Francisco.
Hi, I'm Dawn. I'm outside of Detroit, and I'll say beets.
Beets. Nice. Chris, and then Risa in Austin.
I'm Chris in San Francisco, and I really like arugula.
Arugula. Okay. Risa, and then Kurt Coleman.
I'm Risa. I'm in Austin at A Path of Peace is the sangha I'm part of. My favorite vegetable is sweet potatoes right now.
Nice. Thank you, Risa. Kurt and then Lauren Gogarty.
Hi, Kurt Coleman from Santa Cruz. And it's hard to pick one, but I'll say carrots.
Carrots, a good standby. Lauren and then Bess.
Hi, Laura. I'm from Palo Alto. Is cocoa bean a vegetable?
It is now.
Okay.
Thank you, Laura. I was thinking Lauren. Not sure where Lauren.
Oh, yeah, Bess. Hi.
Oh, there you are, Lauren. Yes, you. And then Lauren and then Bess. How about that?
So I'm Lauren. I am in the Santa Cruz Mountains, not that far from IRC. And my favorite vegetable is tomatoes.
Nice. But Bess and then Beverly.
I'm Bess. I'm from San Mateo, and I like sweet potatoes.
Oh, nice. Beverly and then Elizabeth.
I'm Beverly. I live in San Jose, California, and my favorite vegetable is spinach.
Spinach. Elizabeth and then Claire. Oh, I can't hear you, Elizabeth. I still can't. I still can't hear you, but it doesn't look like you're muted. This is a mystery. Oh, it looks like now maybe you're connecting to audio. Oh, there we go. So now can you unmute yourself?
Yes, sorry about that.
Sorry about that.
Okay. Lots of problems here. So I'm Elizabeth. I live up in Northern Marin in Novato, and my favorite vegetable is artichoke.
Artichoke. Thank you. So Claire and then Phyllis.
Hi, I'm Claire, and I'm in Los Gatos in the South Bay. And my favorite vegetable is Brussels sprout.
Phyllis and then Forrest.
Hi, I'm Phyllis. I live in Whistler, BC. And my favorite is Guilan.
Guilan?
Guilan.
Oh, nice. Thank you. So Forrest and then Stephen.
Hey, I'm Forrest. I'm in Boston and I like eggplant.
Eggplant. This is so great. We're going to have a fantastic salad. Like all these vegetables are here. Stephen and then Lee.
Hi, everybody, and greetings from Austin. The name is Stephen. The vegetable today is zucchini.
Zucchini, nice. Lee and then Morgan.
Hi, I'm from Montreal. Okay, it's dinner time right now. So my favorite vegetable is arugula. So
arugula.
Yes, so it comes under different names. So that's how I know this.
Yeah.
Uroquet. Yes.
Yes. You're in good company. You're in good company. Thank you, Lee. And then Morgan and then Uri.
Hi, my computer is really kind of wonky, so I'm just turning off my video while I speak. I'm Morgan. I'm from Redwood City, California, right down the street from IMC. And my favorite vegetable is, because I'm originally from Boston, is corn on the cob, and it's but now I put a California twist on it with hot sauce and lime.
I love it. Thank you, Morgan. So Uri and then Preeti.
Hi, I'm from Houston, Texas. My favorite vegetable would have to be broccoli.
Nice. Preeti and then Anita.
Hi, I'm Preeti. I live in New Jersey, and one of my favorite vegetables is okra.
Nice, thank you. Anita and then Patty.
Hi, my name is Anita. I live in Cary, North Carolina, and my favorite vegetable is eggplant.
Eggplant. So Patty and then Amy Wayne Wong.
Hello, everybody. My name is Patricia. I live in San Jose, Costa Rica, and my favorite vegetable would be kale.
Is potato?
Kale.
Kale. Oh, nice, nice, nice. And you're in Costa Rica. Okay, welcome, welcome. And Amy, and then Michael on the phone.
Hi, everyone. My name is Amy, and I live in Sunnyvale, California. And my favorite vegetable is bacon.
Bacon.
Just kidding.
That's very cute.
Right now, I'm fond of tomatoes. Now.
Thank you. Thank you, Amy. And then Michael on the phone.
Hi, this is Michael on the phone, and I am proudly vegan, and I like all vegetables, but I guess I like purslane a lot, but I'm pretty full of equanimity, so everything everyone mentioned is I love. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Did I miss anybody? Okay. Okay. So just a really warm welcome. Just a kind of, I don't know, talking about vegetables is just a way to kind of bring us all in the room in an easy way. So thank you for that. You know, if you had to ask me what my favorite vegetable is, probably celery. These days, I'm keen on celery. Kim, do you want to say what your favorite vegetable is?
These days, I'm liking eggplant.
Eggplant. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So I just want to spend just a few minutes talking about the aims of this course, like what we're doing here. And as Kim pointed out, the class will be a combination of some talks and some small group discussion, some guided meditation and some Q&A. So don't worry, Kim and I will not be lecturing nonstop for 2 hours or something like this, right? Or nor will you be meditating nonstop for 2 hours, but there'll be a combination. But I was reflecting on what we had written as the description for this course, and writing that we wrote the wise and compassionate qualities that emerge through meditation and Dharma practice can come alive in each moment of experience. As we move into 2021, how is the Dharma coming alive for you? So we're going to explore this, how to have the Dharma come alive, so to speak. And there's a number of different ways. And in the beginning, we'll do this, the first two sessions, we'll be talking about methods, like different ways to engage with, right now I'll just use this word Dharma. We'll unpack that as we go along. There's so many different meanings to that. So the first two classes are kind of some methods, some ways to approach it. And then the remaining four are different ideas, or maybe not even ideas, different areas, different regions, arenas, elements, all different ways we can think about it. So different ways in which we might apply these methods. And in such a way that to help bring the Dharma alive, of course, it's not uncommon for us to just to be engaging with our spiritual life, our inner life, in the same way that we engage with all perhaps other areas of our lives. You know, if we tend to be analytical and wanting to figure things out, we might bring that to our spiritual practice. And that's fine. We can bring that, can welcome that. But might there be, in addition, some other ways? Or maybe we're more of a heart-centered person, and that our inner life, our emotional life is very rich and helps direct us. And we can bring that to the Dharma as well. But then also we can expand it and bring some other aspects too. So in this class, Kim and I are hoping to create the conditions in which you might engage and investigate and maybe roll up your sleeves a little bit with the Dharma and have it come alive for you. I don't know if I... So I'll say a little bit more, is that we will be introducing some sutta passages. So Kim and I both have a love of the suttas, but this isn't a sutta study class, so it's not exclusively that. We'll be bringing some in. We'll be bringing them into some of our teachings, as well as offering them some of the readings that you can do on your own, and then we'll like discuss them in subsequent classes. And as well as, you know, we'll bring in some poetry also, and some things from modern contemporary teachers. So range from thousands of years ago in the suttas, as well as some contemporary Dharma teachings and some poetry. And so it's kind of what inspires me and Kim and what we're drawing from, and I'm really looking forward to sharing this with you all. So maybe I'll kick it back to Kim and see if I forgot anything or if you just want to take it from here.
Sounds good. The Dharma is pretty much learned by doing. So we'll go ahead with starting with this first, as Diana mentioned, methods we want to talk about. And today's concept is questioning and inquiry and investigation and what kind of a stance that puts our mind in order to be able to walk the path. So this course, you know, being called the Dharma Life, what is that? Well, there isn't just one Dharma Life and you need to figure out, you need to get into it. There's as many Dharma Lives as there are people here on this call. And it's something that we each discover through our own practice, through walking the path and cultivating the practices that are offered. That's how the Dharma Life is discovered. And so our proposal here at the outset is that asking questions or having a mind of inquiry in some way is a valuable skill in walking this path. So having this kind of an idea that we're coming with a question or some kind of an inquiry contrasts with other ways that we might approach the path, like being passive and hoping that someone else is going to tell us the answer, or being mired in doubt and not being able to move forward. We're also trying to control or engineer everything that's happening. That's kind of the antithesis of being open and asking a question. So we're going to suggest that this kind of approach or stance of inquiry or openness is very valuable. This is a quote from Albert Einstein. "The important thing is not to stop questioning. Curiosity has its own reason for existing. One cannot help but be in awe when he contemplates the mysteries of eternity, of life, of the marvelous structure of reality. It is enough if one tries merely to comprehend a little of this mystery every day." So you can feel into some of that, see what it touches in you. This approach of investigation and inquiry is valuable both on and off the cushion. So that will be another aspect of this course, is that we're always, there are things to do on the cushion, and then there's a way that we can carry that into our life also. So there isn't so much of this distinction or barrier between what I'm doing when I'm formally practicing and what I'm doing when I'm interacting with my family or doing my job. And this attitude of questioning or inquiry is one way that those two can start to feel more united for us. So in case you've been practicing for a while and feel like there's this difference, you have a double life in a sense, this may help to begin unifying things. So probably we've learned by now that life is not always totally straightforward. We're not really given a clear road that we can understand logically, oh, to here, to here, to here, to here. Nor are we given a stable situation that gives us reliable emotional support in our life all the time. Stuff shifts and changes and comes and goes. So life can be messy and painful in various ways. So to navigate, we need to develop some skill in how we hold and approach experience. Somehow we have to keep options open, hang with them long enough to see what makes sense. And then when the moment is right, you actually have to take the step forward. You have to actually do it. And then that will shift the scene and we'll see what else comes after that, right? So there are quite a few Buddhist teachings that encourage this kind of keeping things open and yet making a choice and going when it's the right moment. And so here's one. I would say this is a stance that's neither passive nor controlling. It kind of goes in between those. So this is from the Samyutta Nikaya. There's a deva talking to the Buddha, and he says, he asks a question. There we go, a question right away. He says, "How, dear sir, did you cross the flood?" And that's a metaphor for getting across the difficulties of life, the difficulties in our minds. Those are called the flood. So how did you cross the flood? And the Buddha says, "By not halting, friend, and by not straining. I crossed the flood. The deva doesn't quite get it. So he says, oh, but how is it that by not halting and by not straining, you were able to cross the flood? And the Buddha says, when I came to a standstill, friend, then I sank. But when I struggled, then I got swept away. So it is in this way that by not halting and by not straining, I crossed the flood. So there's a sense that we can't stop exactly. Life goes on. So we have to keep moving with it. But we all have done this in our lives, is we've gotten ahead of ourselves and tried to push and create and make things happen when that wasn't the right approach. And so we're struggling and we get swept away. We lose our footing. So you have to keep moving along, but you have to move in the way that the waters are flowing. And this is this process of kind of learning to walk, learning to walk the path. So we might then say, okay, great, I'm going to start asking all kinds of questions. But wait, not every question is a useful question, actually. So there's in Majjhima Nikaya 2, there's a set of unhelpful questions. The Buddha starts off with what we shouldn't be asking. So I might actually read all of them. There's a lot. So they go like this. Was I in the past? Was I not in the past? What was I in the past? How was I in the past? Having been what was I in the past? Shall I be in the future? Shall I not be in the future? And so forth. And then it gets to the present. Am I? Am I not? How am I? What am I? Where has this being come from? And where is it bound? So, you know, it's part of the joke is that there's so many of them. And you start realizing after the eighth or ninth one that these have a similar flavor. And so it might not be that we're literally asking the question, was I in the past? Or what was I in the past? And yet, how many of our thought patterns are about, let's see, back then, when she was telling me that, I was getting really angry, wasn't I? And, you know, and this is all kind of an elaboration on the question, how was I in the past? And what was I doing? And having been what did I become? How many of us have asked that question in some form? How did I get to where I am today? It must have been something about my mother in the background. You know, and so these are all things where the Buddha says, if we get wrapped up in these questions, we are not attending appropriately to experience. That's what he says. He doesn't say these are wrong or bad or unethical. He just says, that's not the proper way to pay attention to experience. And so then we can rightfully say, well, what then is a good question? So that I think is something that doesn't have quite as straightforward of an answer, but we can discover it through our practice. But we can say that generally good questions have the quality of being immediate, practical. They are about the present moment. And in addition, they should be something called onward leading. So we should ask a question in a way that what it opens for us lets us take another step forward. And then we can evaluate again, you know, where we are and what's coming next. It also matters how we ask the question. So the very way that we ask the question affects what kind of answer we can receive. Isn't that true? So we're always asking from our current understanding. How could we otherwise? I mean, we have our certain understanding and we ask a question from that. But if the question is onward leading, it will change our understanding. As investigating the question is going to somehow change our understanding. So this sounds abstract. Let me just give you sort of a mundane example. Let's say that you need to get a new car. You need to get a car. Your car is broken and you're looking for another one. So you have in the background of your mind some kind of a question like, how can I get a car and what should I get? And so then you start noticing every car you look at, you start saying, well, what about something like that? No, that looks a little big. And so, you know, and so you start to realize, oh, okay, I realize I have a certain size frame in mind that maybe I didn't articulate before. Or suddenly you start seeing all the cars that have for sale signs on them. And you'd never noticed them before. They've been sitting in your neighborhood for weeks with those signs on, but you didn't see them until you thought about wanting a car. So the fact that we have this inquiry in the background is helping us to understand more about our situation, and it also affects what we pay attention to, right? So this now transfers into the spiritual realm. We have spiritual questions too. We might have questions about awakening, about compassion, about ethics, about wisdom. And these are somehow in our mind, maybe they're explicit or not, but those affect where our attention goes. You know, if we never thought about awakening at all, we probably would see a bunch of things that are related to it. But as soon as we start having questions like, what is this awakening thing? Or what does compassion really mean? Then we start noticing things that are related to that, and they can help pull us along the path in a certain way. So in the same way, you know, by opening to the teachings, we help the Dharma life unfold. Reading the suttas, listening to Dharma talks, talking with people, going to classes like this. It can't have no effect. It starts affecting your attention and then what you take in, and then it will be onward leading in some way. So the encouragement is to, in this course, is to start to walk the path in this way, is to have some kind of an inquiry, and then take a little step from that, and then see how the position looks once you've taken that step, and then keep going, not standing still and not struggling as we go forward. So, of course, despite all this focus on questions, I do want to say that inquiry does not always equate to having a clear, defined, exact question. It's okay. It's sort of more subtle than that, actually. So sometimes our questions are explicit and can be articulated, and that's great. And a lot of the time, I think they can't. They're more background. I actually went for years in my practice without ever asking a question of a teacher. You know, they get to the end of the Dharma talk and say, are there any questions? I had no questions. You know, I go to an interview on a retreat, I had no questions. You know, it's like, but now looking back, I see that it's not that there wasn't anything going on. Actually, there was a lot going on. It just wasn't really up in kind of verbal form. My heart was doing things, making inquiries of some kind. So don't worry too much if you don't think you have explicit questions. This is a little bit more general than that. You're in this class, you have some kind of an inquiry in your heart. And so the hope is that you'll just go forward and engage and see what comes out of it. So basically don't worry if you're sitting there thinking, uh-oh, I don't have questions like that. Just follow along and it'll be fine. And we're going to unfold farther in this session more about what inquiry means. So I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you, Kim. So now we'll put you into some small groups where you have a chance to talk amongst yourselves. And Kim was just describing some characteristics of good questions, or that they're practical and that they're onward leading. But in your experience, what are some characteristics, some qualities of good questions? And or what does it mean to be practical? What does it mean to be onward leading? So what are some qualities of good questions in your experience? And then you get to define good in a way I think we're pointing to helpful, but maybe for you, you might have something different. But it's an opportunity for you to kind of like engage with the question of questions. So we'd like to do this. You'll be in group of three or four. And we'll have it so that the person who starts, and we'll do this first one in alphabetical order by your screen name. And I always feel like I have to apologize for people whose name starts with A or Z, you know. So, but we won't always do it this way, so don't worry. And Amy, you won't always have to go first. So, if the person who goes first says one or two statement sentences, and then it goes to a second person, and then they say something. And then it goes to a third person, they say something. There's a fourth, they say something. And then it comes back around to the first person again. And then they will be influenced by what they heard. And then the second person has a second time and around. So, and that way you kind of like share ideas and create something together, as opposed to like a monologue and opposed to a regular conversation. So I admit this is very contrived. It's not the way you usually have conversations, but it's a way to come like together to explore this topic of questions and when we can, what are the qualities of a good question, including this idea of practical and onward leading. So I think with that, we can send them off into their breakout room. So have fun. Okay, so welcome back. So would anybody like to share what was there any aha moments in there in the small group, or maybe had a new idea and learned something, or maybe more questions arose? Or and I think it's easiest for us if we use the what I call the blue hands, or and that is if you're on a computer, you go down to the participants on the bottom of the Zoom screen. If you click on that, then to the right will be a list, and you can raise your hand. And I think if you're on a tablet or a phone, there's the three dots. You can click that to raise your hand. Was there anything that was interesting or fun or Beverly?
Yeah, we somehow got to the obvious connection between questions and curiosity. And then from curiosity to energy, which I think is a factor of enlightenment. And I just thought that was an interesting chain. And then we kind of got stuck on there for a while, but I kind of liked that that causal chain.
Nice. Yes, you're absolutely right that in the seven factors of awakening, the second one is, well, the first one is mindfulness, and then investigation, and then energy. So there is definitely a link there. Yeah, thanks. Anybody else have a comment? Kurt.
Yeah, I want to take issue with the Buddha. If I were ignorant and I went to the Buddha and said, I want you to tell me about my past life, that might be the first step in my awakening. And because I've started a connection with the Buddha, I'm interested in the Buddha's opinion, I'm open to what the Buddha has to say, and the Buddha can tell me it's not a good question, and I can keep trying, keep moving forward. On the other hand, I understand what the Buddha's saying, so I'm just kind of playing the devil's advocate.
Kim, do you?
Well, first of all, we don't have the Buddha anymore. So, but you could, I suppose, transfer that to another teacher. It's also true that there, you know, we can use external wisdom before we have internal wisdom. So there can be ways in which, yeah, making a movement that is nominally unskillful in some way, if we ask that of a wise person, they will point us in the right direction. So that can happen, but ultimately we would want to be able to do that ourselves.
Stephen.
Well, how questions are asked is relevant to how we think. So the thinking is like speech. All the principles of right speech are relevant. And then also the path factors, whether the way of thinking and the way of thinking about forward-leaning questions, whether it's consistent with right view and right intention and the other path factors, so that the thinking itself is done in a way that's consistent with Dhamma.
Thank you, Stephen. Kind of highlighting the connection between the questions and thinking. and speech. Yeah, thank you. We have time for a few more if there's some other comments or questions, or if Kim, you have something you'd like to add to Stephen's comment. So. I'm trying to look on both screens here. Oh, okay. So Phyllis.
I love that we're starting with this approach of inquiry, because I gravitate towards the wisdom approach to the Dharma. And so I just love this kind of idea of always being able to collect more information, collect more data to get the understanding. I think for me, I'd like to investigate more why metta is so difficult to fold into that kind of model or that approach. Because I find that there's a lot of resistance to metta because it doesn't really seem to lend itself to inquiry.
Hmm. Can you say just a little bit more that metta doesn't lend itself to inquiry?
I think I struggle with the ability to authentically feel. And so then I don't know how to work with that in terms of being investigative of how to continue that concentration practice in a way that feels skillful.
So if I understand what you're saying, that when you're using metta as a concentration practice, but it's not unfolding in the way that you were kind of expecting or hoping or something, and then you're not quite sure how investigation could help there. Is that?
I think in our breakout room, I was saying that I like to often ask myself, is this helpful? Does it feel wholesome? And a lot of times when I practice metta, it just doesn't. I can't genuinely say that it does. Whereas when I do Dhammavikaya, or if I pronounce that correctly, oftentimes I feel it's so rich, it's so helpful, it's so productive, it's so it's onward leading.
Nice. Thank you, Phyllis. We'll be talking a little bit about just this after the break, just a little bit, this idea of how questions kind of feel. Thank you. Kim, do you have something you'd like to say?
I think we will, and we'll explore this, of course, more later in the course. We have a session that focuses on some of these areas. But maybe I'll just offer an image, which is that there are two different ways that we can break the bonds that are binding us. One of them is to take a sword and cut them, and that's the wisdom approach. And there's also the melting approach, which is more the concentration, the metta. And so, you know, depending on which bonds are up for you, different things are appropriate. So that's going to feel right based on what you're working on.
Thank you, Kim. Laura, can you unmute yourself, please?
There we go. I'm sorry. Yeah, it was just more of a reflection, you know. I don't think I framed my answers very well. I was trying to say that, you know, I thought one good quality of the question is that it's pragmatic, in the sense that I have a practical question in my daily life, and then I kind of look for answer in the Dharma. And I gave an example of something I heard Gil said, and it's just like, oh my goodness, there's my answer. You know, and it's not that I'm looking for a fixed answer, but people didn't like that. People like open-ended question, and they didn't think practicality should be a good quality. So I'm like, okay, that's fine. I'm just kind of going, this is where I am in my practice. So, okay. I didn't know whether you have any comments for that.
I think that, I don't know, Kim, if you had something you'd like to say, or if I should just jump in here. I think in that kind of the list of questions that Kim was reading, that the Buddha said, you know, was I in the past? Was I not in the past? Have you been one? What will I be? Or something like this. It's like, well, it's like it's not, is that fruitful? Is it helpful in the sense of knowing the answers to that? Will that support some further development of the Dharma? So I think maybe that's one way to.
Yeah. Okay.
And then Chris, this will be the last one, and then we'll go for a break. And I'm sorry, Chris, I think you might have had I think you had clapping hands earlier. And...
Yeah, I didn't know. Yeah, I didn't know what I pressed for a second there. I was like,
sorry. So, and then they went away. And I thought,
Thank you. You know, it seems like my inquiry, or when I'm reading stuff or hearing stuff about Dharma related stuff, if I'm not understanding it or I'm looking at that question, the answer reveals itself eventually in my practice. It's sort of a reflection that just keeps sort of churning away deeply in many ways. And it comes up through meditation, certainly when I'm reflecting. That answer sort of like, or will surprise me, like I'll look outside the window and the way the light hits the, you know, the window, all of a sudden I'll have a revelation of this sort of answer. But it's an embodied answer. So I may be able to express it to someone at that time or later in my own terms, or it'll get more fruitful and it'll develop. So it's just sort of this idea of revealing the answer as opposed to having answer. It's more of an embodied answer. That's what I wanted to say about that, I guess, or my feeling state about it.
Fantastic. Thank you, Chris. We'll be talking about this, just precisely what you're talking about after the break. We'll be unpacking and discussing that kind of way of finding or experiencing answers. And Kim, do you have anything you'd like to say before we go to the break?
Nope.
Okay. So can we do this as a kind of just a quick little break, maybe just 6 minutes, a little bio break? And we'll come back at 4:05 in California, 7:05 on the East Coast. Okay, see you in just a few minutes.